In radio, you come to expect the unexpected.
This is back in the days of tape editing, boys and girls.
I pitched the idea of big band music. Nobody thought that was a good idea.
Okay, we're going to start doing Focus on Technology. And I was like, what are you talking about?
I had a fan club in the area prisons, and they would call in because folks could call in requests.
So I'm down next to a baptismal tub, and I'm on headphones down here in the basement of the Emory Theater.
And then I'm sure he's there cursing me because we're trying to pull sound off of sources, you know, really paper discs and things that had been glued together in the heat of attics.
A freshman at Xavier University gets the keys to a 5x7 closet with the letters WXU on the door. The year is 1957. A small transmitter from an army surplus is inside. A twisted pair of wires carries Muzak to parts of Brockman Hall. The keys entrusted to a student open the door to closed-circuit campus radio. What fascinated that student, Ed Schmidt, about radio? How has radio kept us company, informed and entertained us through our lives? And now, what is the future of WVXU as we find a new home today in Evanston? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU, broadcasting today for the first time from 2117 Dana Avenue. I'm Lucy May. A pioneering group of students managed to move into a basement studio on campus with a used console purchased from WLW for a dollar and a remote amplifier from WKRC. They were on the air.
This is Radio 91.7 WVXU-FM, Cincinnati.
For many of our longtime listeners, some of these next voices will take you back.
I'm Mike Martini. I am a producer and host at WMKV Radio and former host at WVXU. The air studio was probably 6 foot by 8 foot. Phone rang, the Christmas lights would blink. So that's how you knew you had somebody on the phone. It was in the basement, but there was a window at the top. So if you had to get in after hours, you would go behind the hedges of Alter Hall and tap on the glass and then run around to the side of the building and they would let you in.
My name is Jay Adrick. My title during my working career was the director of radio and television, and also I was an assistant professor of communications at Xavier, 1971 to 1978. The real reason for starting WVXU was to have a training ground for young people who were interested in going into the radio business.
They have a career night at my high school, and one of the gentlemen there, I don't remember who it was, but he said, radio is like drama except with a steady paycheck. So I thought, that's interesting. I never considered radio.
Programming was pretty much all picked by the students. It was a lot of rock and roll of the time. I remember one student from the Cleveland area who did a polka show.
Good news, great jocks, and the music you want to hear. All that and no commercials. Weeknights 8 to 11 on WVXU-FM.
It moved from being solely an entertainment function for kids living in the dorm to being a public station, albeit a low-power public station, but one that, you know, if you were in 10 miles of the tower, you could hear the station.
I'm Pete Reitmeier, former When Swing Was King host and producer of Cincinnati Edition. I started Xavier in 75 in the radio and TV program, got involved with the station in 76. I pitched the idea of big band music. Nobody thought that was a good idea. I had to lobby pretty hard to get that on, but he gave me a shot, and so I started that program called When Swing Was King.
From the WVXU studios, a historical look at the big band and the people that made them great. When Swing Was King, with Mark Magistrelli, featuring Russ Dixon.
it became so popular that it was on 7 days a week.
So I walked up to the station and I volunteered to do anything because I just wanted to meet people. I'm Lee Hay, and I began my WVXU career as a jazz volunteer. I ended up emptying trash cans and working in the office. And one day I was hanging out and David Delegater said, he was on the air and the equipment was pretty simple. And he said, I got to go for a few minutes. Can you take over? And I said, what? And he said, yeah, here's all you got to do. You push this, you turn this, you cue up records this way, because it was all records back in 75. I said, okay, so that started my journey in radio. Good evening. Welcome to Audiosyncrasies. I'm Lee Hay. Tonight we'll hear from Janice Ian, Isaac Hayes, Emmylou Harris, Gooding, and Jeffrey Gaines. When I came to Cincinnati Public Radio in 2005, I became a producer of Around Cincinnati and many, many specials. Volunteers were the backbone of the station. Very small staff. We were family. We didn't look at the clock. Even as staff members, we didn't look at the clock. And we worked long shifts. But it didn't matter because we were having fun.
Writers Radio Theater was done live before an audience. We recorded at the Emory Theater.
Writers Radio Theater is on the air.
Yo-da-lay-yo. It's the Writers on the Radio. Come on, partner, saddle up and go. Get ready for the Cowboy Show. Yo-da-lay-yo.
George Zahn from WMKV. I'm the station director here. We actually got Red Barber on the phone at the Emory Theater from Tallahassee in the middle of one of their skits. Red Barber breaks in and says, boys, what are you doing? First, they thought it was just a gag, but when they found out it was a real Red Barber, they were floored.
With America's favorite cowboys, riders in the sky.
Our own ship has just gave its warning whistles, and now the flak is coming up in the sky in streamers from the warships behind us. The sparks seem to just float up in the sky, and we're too far away to hear their explosion.
Mark, we ought to do something about D-Day. We're coming up on the 50th anniversary. We'll recreate what it sounded like that day. And as I said, I hate the word recreation. I hate using recreation. It makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I'm Mark Magistrelli, host of When Swing Was King and The Big Broadcast. We have been living in the age of recorded media since at least, 1877 with Mr. Edison? So chances are, not always, but chances are awfully good that you can find something that is real, something that is genuine, that happened. And I did know of an archive from KIRO. For some reason at that station, the general manager had literally dropped the needle on the transcription lathe, and from the time of the Pearl Harbor attack, he had the station record everything, network, local, what have you.
There he goes.
They got one. They got one.
They got that one. They got it right here.
Did they?
Yeah.
Put this gun. Great blotch of fire came down in the smoldering now, just off our port side in the sea. Smoke and flame there.
You said it.
The thing that was so important, and I think what won the Peabody, is this was radio's coming of age. This was the point where newspapers had to take a back seat because things were breaking and breaking quickly. Radio was able to outpace the newspapers of the time. They were able to take this incredible medium and make it immediate.
These guys were absolutely pushing the boundaries of what was possible at the time. Remember, for the D-Day invasion, they had reporters outfitted with film recorders that were able to go through the water and the waves. There were all kinds of things that they were trying to do that really just pushed the technology as far as they had.
I have always loved that radio is just such an immediate medium. There's not a lot of production teams, like there might be in TV. It's just like something happens and you're getting it on the air. I'm Ann Thompson, and I was the former director of talk show programming and eventually news director. Some UC students called up, and they were allowed to take a reporter with them as they tested their experiment in zero G. We had to be down there a week to get all the training in an unpressurized chamber to kind of figure out what hypoxia would feel like. And then we went into a real airplane, a KC-135, and they did 32 parabolas. And I Velcroed my tape recorder to my flight suit, and I would just like float up and I would interview them.
It was a one-of-a-kind sensation. It was awesome. I mean, it's my second flight and everything, and I think I enjoyed this one more than the first one because I wasn't so stuck on the motion sickness thing. I was more in tune with getting the experiment done, concentrating on that, and making sure we got good data.
I love radio. I love the fact that, for example, the old radio shows where everyone has their own imagination, their own image of what a performer looks like or what the situation has looked like. There's a great story of Jack Benny. He had a running gag where he would go down to his vault.
Oh, yeah, I want to go down to my vault and take out some money.
Take out some money?
Yeah.
Can I watch, Daddy?
No, I'll be right back.
And you could hear him chunk, 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 chunk down the steps. All these things, the chains would lock. And he would go to get money out of his vault down in the basement. They tried to do it on TV. They couldn't do it. They couldn't build a set that could replicate what people envisioned in their imaginations.
In June of 2013, they hired me to produce Cincinnati Edition. The first show was July 1st of 2013. Had I known what I was getting into, I would have probably not, because the show started with a rotating series of hosts 4 days a week for an hour. So Mark Purcell hosted one day, Marianne Zalesnik hosted one day, Mark Haney hosted one day, Jay Hanselman and Howard Wilkinson hosted together one day, and each host had a specific area that they covered.
One afternoon, we had Fairport Convention booked. What we didn't know is that the night before, they had a concert in New York City. So after that show, which probably ended, about 1 o'clock or so, midnight, they got into their tour bus and drove straight to our station. And they pulled up in the parking lot of Xavier with this tour bus, wanting to know where to park it, which was kind of interesting. The boys came in, and they were wired. Big time. They were so funny. And they walked into the studio with a bottle of whiskey and went over to the grand piano and put it down and said, "All right, let's go."
Anytime you've got live programming, you're just taking a chance. So there were plenty of times when guests, they would either just not show up at all, or they would email an hour before the show and say, I'm sorry, I can't make it today. So it kept it interesting. We never had a situation where we just couldn't air the show that day. We always were able to figure something out. Sometimes it was a stretch, and sometimes a listener could tell, and sometimes they couldn't. It was just a matter of slamming away at it until you found something that worked. I think what's going to save radio more than anything else is local programming.
There's this level of connection that I don't think television can replicate. We went through the COVID thing recently, and admittedly, our listeners where I work now are older, and we would get people calling in just in tears saying, "You don't know what this means to me because I'm shut in, nobody visits me, and yet I can turn on your radio station and listen to it during the day."
Jimmy Dorsey and the Band with Helen O'Connell, doing one of Ira Gershwin's most celebrated lyrics, Embraceable You, from the Broadway show Girl Crazy. That song came out in 1930. Before that, Kay Kaiser in Hi-Fi with...
From the history of WVXU to our future in a new home. That's ahead on Cincinnati Edition. I started listening to public radio as a teenager with my mom. Click and Clack would always tell the women who called in to Car Talk to give their husbands a hard time. My mom did not need that advice, but WVXU and WGUC were the soundtrack to those years and most every year since. Today, we're marking our 55th year on the air in a brand new home. This is Cincinnati Edition, and I'm Lucy May. Our new building in Evanston is more than a radio station. It's a community space, and we want to share it with you. Cincinnati Public Radio President Rich Eisworth and Vice President of News Marianne Zalesnik join me now for our first broadcast in our new home.
Yay! Welcome.
Hi, Marianne.
Hello.
And Rich.
Hello.
Yes. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Rich, for our listeners who haven't seen the new digs, describe what it's like. Give us a visual tour. Paint a picture for us.
It's a palette of glass, basically. So there's a lot of glass around the building. It's evocative. It's iconic. It's quickly viewable from I-71. It fronts on Dana Ave, and it's an impressive building, not only because of its stature and its looks, but because of its purpose and what we can do there.
Well, how did Cincinnati Public Radio decide to make the leap from our former location on Central Parkway and to this new location in Evanston and constructing a brand new home?
I wish I could say it was an inspiration that happened overnight, but it wasn't. It was a long process. We gradually, over years, outgrew the facility on Central Parkway, and there was simply no room for us to expand. And when you combine that with the inherent disadvantages or deficiencies in the building, it was clear that in order to plan for the next generation, the next century, the 21st century of public media, we needed a facility that would be open, airy, accommodating, healthy, have a lot of conveniences, not only for staff, but especially for visitors. And so the search began. The process began about more than 7 years ago now. We looked at more than 24 sites throughout Greater Cincinnati. We had a couple overarching, shall I say, directives. One, we wanted to obviously stay within the confines of the city of Cincinnati because we are Cincinnati Public Radio. We also needed a space that was ideally in a neighborhood because the old space, as you know very well, quickly had developed into an entertainment sports complex, and it just didn't have a neighborhood feel anymore. So we're really excited to be in Evanston. It's a diverse, it's an up-and-coming, welcoming neighborhood. We're really proud to be part of Evanston, to be a neighbor here, and we think that the building will allow us to do that exceptionally well.
Marianne, Rich was just talking about growing pains. You've been feeling that in the news department, haven't you?
Well, it's true. We had a newsroom when I started here when WGUC bought WVXU in 2005. We had a pretty big room that we were able to get our news staff in. But our news staff has grown. It was down to as few as four at one point, and we are now up to 12 people in the newsroom and looking to expand. And then COVID hit, and we also realized we had to put people in separate offices. So we actually opened up some closets, cleaned them out, and put folks in there so they could work separated. But if we were all to try to go back into that newsroom now, we wouldn't all fit. And the folks from the Ohio newsroom, two of our reporters, Aaron Gottsacker and Kendall Crawford, are working out of that room. But we're all over the place. And when we're trying to collaborate and all work together, I think it's really difficult to do when everybody is all over the building, wherever you could shove somebody, basically, to fit somebody in to give them some space during COVID. So we're excited to have everybody able to collaborate and work in the same general space. We'll all be very close together in terms of being able to chat and to talk. If you see newsrooms on television shows or anything like that, and you've certainly, Lucy, worked in your share of newsrooms in newspapers as well, they're sort of like bullpens. Everybody's in one big space, and you get ideas that way, and you can bounce ideas off of one another and you know, who did you call for this? That sort of thing. And we can do that in this new newsroom in a way that we absolutely cannot on Central Parkway.
Rich, one of the things that is so special about this new building is the mass timber.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about why that was important.
Well, all credit, we're giving credit where credit's due. Immersion Design, our architects, came up to us with that proposal. They've been looking for a client for some time that would be interested in taking a chance. We are the first mass timber building in Greater Cincinnati. We also happen to be the first mass timber broadcast facility in the United States. Mass timber is unique because unlike steel and concrete, which is the normal building material used for most buildings, it is sustainable. It also is a carbon sink as opposed to concrete and steel, which creates a lot of carbon in its process. Wood, by its very nature, is a carbon sink and will retain the carbon so long as the wood stays intact. And we expect this to stay intact for decades. It also allows the building to have an open and airy feel and exploit all the glass that I mentioned. And the design of the building is such that the architects made sure that as much of the timber, as much of the mass timber as possible, is visible. So all the beams, all the supporting structure is all visible. None of it is covered by, virtually none of it is covered by drywall. And you get that impression the minute you walk in the building. It's just a very warm and inviting space. And we think that people will thrive because of that.
That wood helps with acoustics too, doesn't it, Marianne?
Oh, I think so. I mean, the whole place seems very, as Rich said, sort of open, but the studios are built and constructed in such a way that they're very dead, is the word that I use. You walk in there,
and that's
a good thing, right?
Good,
you want a studio to be dead because you get in there and the sound's not bouncing all over the place, and it just will sound better over the air, which is ultimately what we're trying to do, is have the best sound we can over the air. Rich, you can probably describe that better, but they're sort of like a room built inside a room, is that?
They are rooms built, exactly, that's exactly what it is. There's floating floor, the floors float on neoprene risers, the entire structure, the walls, the ceiling are actually, you know, separated from the outer wall and ceiling and floor, and that way it prevents sound transmission from the outside, which is a bane of any broadcast or recording engineer. So we will have the best acoustical studios in the region. You glossed over the biggest improvement in studios for our staff.
This is my favorite part. Everyone that has ever talked to me about this knows this is my favorite part, is that there will be windows in our broadcast studios. And it has happened, Rich, you may remember. There have been days I've been on the air and said things like, on this beautiful sunny day, because that's what the weather forecast that I have is. And Rich will call and say, you do know it's pouring right now. And it's like, I do not know that. And I would try to get to a window as much as possible, but you can't leave the studio. And I just think it will bring a lot of not only light into the room, but just light into the whole process, because we're able to look out and just mentally, I think that's going to be good for everybody.
Rich, what about the public performance spaces?
I consider the building to be kind of a living room for Greater Cincinnati. Up until now, the building from which we operated was very tight, very small. There were simply no public spaces. This building is designed specifically to bring the community, to bring the public into the facility. So we have a large public space that we will be using to have concerts, a variety of concerts, student, professional, amateur. We will have, we hope, book signings, political debates. We hope to be able to sponsor some live Cincinnati Edition programs in front
audience,
of a live audience.
Yeah.
You'll be thrilled about.
Yeah.
but we also will make the space available for local nonprofits. And we already had a number of organizations contact us, from social groups to Evanston Community Council to some music groups locally, who are signing up to use that facility that can accommodate about 130 plus people for concerts and for presentations. We really want to be a part of the community, and we think this building will allow that to happen. We have a phenomenal performance studio. It is, without a doubt, acoustically, in terms of appearance, cosmetics, and also in terms of outfitting the equipment we've got here, it is by far and away the most sophisticated, best performing performance studio for musicians, not only in Greater Cincinnati, but we think in the Midwest. It's going to blow people away. And we've had artists come by, and they just can't wait to get in there to begin recording.
This is going to be good for my singing career, Rich.
We're looking forward to it.
You've both been with the station for a long time. I want to kind of take a step back and ask each of you how you got your start. Let's start with you, Rich.
I started in this career because I couldn't get a regular job. Is that a good enough
I
answer?
I don't believe that.
I majored in media back in the day in the Jurassic times. It was called broadcasting. I spent my entire career working in commercial and non-commercial, primarily non-commercial radio. But I love it. I love interacting with public the way we do. I love our mission. I love the fact that we're here to serve the public interest. I really love the people that this enterprise attracts. We've got, as you know, yourself included, we have phenomenal people working at this station. It's fun.
Oh, you only have to say that because I'm sitting right across from you with a hot mic.
Your foot is near mine.
Mary Ann, how about you?
It's kind of funny. I sort of feel like I've done the full circle thing. I started in college WMUB when I was at Miami University, and that's where I first started doing news. And then I worked out in a small station in Illinois trying to get a first job in 1983 when it was really hard to find jobs, and worked at a very small, tiny, tiny station in a rural Illinois. And then I came back to Cincinnati when WNKU was going on the air, started there 2 weeks before the station went on the air. And that would be an anniversary. April 29th is 40 years ago that I started waking people up in Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah.
I always think that's kind of funny. And so that I was there for 20 years. And then I was driving home from work one day, and I had just pulled into a gas station to get gas. And I had the radio on, and I heard a news story on another station that said WGUC was buying WVXU. And I was so glad I was parked because I was pretty sure I would have driven off the road. That didn't happen. That was an unusual thing. Radio stations, public especially now, combine and get bought by others and all of that. That was not happening 20 years ago. And so the minute that happened, I knew when they said that it was going to be turned into an all-news station, I knew that I needed to apply. And so I was fortunate enough to get hired as the news director here, and I've been here that entire time.
And Rich, how long have you been with Cincinnati Public Radio, or WVXU specifically?
27 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Never worked at a place this long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How have you seen WVXU and Cincinnati Public Radio just change and grow in that time?
Oh, there's no comparison. It was always a kind of a quirky station. Public radio prided itself for a long time in being quirky and not of the mainstream. But obviously, in the decades since, we've become more businesslike in a good way, much more professional, much more attuned to defining our audience, finding out who the audience is and what needs the audience has. And I think that it has served us well. And in spite of the perturbations happening on the national scene, we're extremely positive and optimistic about the future of Cincinnati Public Radio.
What are the biggest changes that you think of, Mary Ann, when you think of the time you've been here at Cincinnati Public Radio and WVXU?
Everything we do is different. I mean, the fact that radio reporters are now photographers and writing print stories, and there aren't, when I first started in Cincinnati with WNKU, I mean, there were easily 10 radio stations and 3 or 4 TV stations at every news conference you would go to. And it just doesn't even happen. These days, we are pretty much the only radio station. Occasionally, you will see one of the other commercial stations, radio stations in town, but rarely. And it's interesting to me just how things have changed. And I am proud of the fact that we continue to provide news and information that people can trust, and that we go out and cover the news the way it needs to be covered. We don't sort of expect just to pick it up from somewhere else. And we do our best to keep people informed in a way that 10 stations did 20 or 30 years ago.
I've been speaking with Cincinnati Public Radio President Rich Eisworth and Vice President of News Mary Ann Zalesnik. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thanks for having
Pleasure.
Us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Ahead, Rich is going to stick around as we explore the neighborhood of Evanston. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned in to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Evanston is the site of some of the city's most iconic landmarks, and generations of families have called it home. Now, Cincinnati Public Radio calls it home, too. Joining me in this recorded interview to discuss the history and future of Evanston are Community Council President James Stallworth, Evanston Community Council Committee Chair Mary Ward, Evanston Employment Resource Center Job Coach Yvonne Jones, and Cincinnati Public Radio President Rich Eisworth. Thank you all so much for being here. Thanks for sticking around, Rich.
Happy to stay.
Mary, talk to me about some of your memories growing up in Evanston, the landmarks that were important to you, the people who were important to you.
I'll be honest, the biggest part of my memories are before 71 South was built. All the streets used to connect. And my family actually all live within blocks. So from my house on Clarion, if I turned left and I walked up three streets, I had an aunt that lived on the corner of Trimble and Clarion. If I would have come out of my house and turned to the right, I could have went down Evanston over the bridge, turned right on Duck Creek, and two blocks away was another aunt. And the remarkable thing is that should I have gone a little bit further up Duck Creek, and to the left on the corner of Duck Creek and Trimble was my grandparents' house. And across the street was my aunt's, another aunt's house. So our family, actually, it was like a walking neighborhood. We could all, you know, walk around and go to each other's houses. We spent a lot of time at my grandmother's house doing gardening. My grandfather came from Georgia. So every year we had to plant a garden. We would plant the garden and then bring the neighbors over, like Mr. Webster, and then a pony kick that was across the street was Mr. Weeby's. It was a totally different environment growing up in Evanston before the highway. And then once the highway came and divided the neighborhood, like the houses and the people, we lost track of who they are. Specifically, I think of two guys that we all played together with, Kippy and Willie. I have no idea what happened to them. All I know is that the highway came, they tore down their houses, and they were gone. I went to St. Mark's, and I'll tell you the reason why we ended up, my sister and I ended up at St. Mark's, is because Evanston got an additional grade school. So I was actually at Evanston Elementary on the corner of Dana and Montgomery, across from the White Castle. But when they built the new school, my parents decided that I would go to St. Mark's School. So I spent a lot of time at St. Mark's. And a remarkable thing about growing up is that you could walk to school. You didn't have to ever worry about anybody jumping out, trying to take you or kidnap you, because everybody knew everybody. Even if you did something, by the time you got back home, you were worn out from the chastisements that you got from house to house. So it was a good thing that everybody knew everybody, and we looked out for each other and kept each other safe. I can remember seeing the people from King Records. I didn't know how short James Brown was until I saw him in person. I remember seeing Bootsy Collins. But these are just like the regular folk that were in the neighborhood that you would see. You wouldn't think anything of it. Speaking of King Records, my neighbor across the street, Mr. Charlton, he actually played for King Records. He had a lot of instruments. And on some days, he would let some of the neighborhood's kids come over with his son. And we formed a band called the Bigfoots. And we would play with the instruments in the garage. But Lloyd Charlton actually cut records at King Records. So it was, you know, nothing to know about a musician on your block that actually was a session musician for the King Records company. So it was just like a whole different lifestyle back growing up, like in the early 60s, all the way up to like the late 80s. It was just a total different vibe.
Yvonne, does that kind of match up with your experience growing up in Evanston?
My experience started at Sawyer Junior High School, which was the Academy of World Languages now. My family moved there in the late 60s, my grandparents. You knew your neighbors, not only just next door, but all the way down the street, round the corner. And I got to know a lot of my neighbors because I became the Avon lady. So I was going up and down the street, and I would go into every neighbor's home within a 3-block radius of my house. And the neighbors, we would go outside and play. We just grew up. There was a grocery store at the corner and a pharmacist there mm-hmm. on Wold and Hewitt Avenue. So mm-hmm. we had just about everything. And then at the other corner of Fairfax, there was another grocery store. So we were surrounded by our needs there. Our churches were close by in walking distance. I remember the schools being built. I come from the other side of Evanston where the split was, near the Fairfax side. Like I said, getting to know your neighbors, and they were your best friends, and we grew up together, and then some of us went on to different high schools, but most of them went to Withrow, but mm-hmm. I went to Quarter Tech, but I didn't go alone. I did have a few friends there. I ended up getting my home there in Evanston over 40 years ago, and that was one of the things, was to know who my neighbors were, at least 3 or 4 houses up and down the street. And I'm not planning on leaving the neighborhood. I know I've gotten letters and emails and all, did I want to sell my house? But my answer is still no. I love my Evanston.
Rich, we've been hearing about this just tremendous legacy of neighborhood and closeness in Evanston. Did that play into the decision for Cincinnati Public Radio to move to the neighborhood in the new building?
Well, let me just start out by saying that I'm enjoying hearing these stories, and I'd certainly love to hear much more about historically what Evanston was before the 71 construction and afterwards, and how important neighbors and neighborhoods and families have been. But it does highlight why we chose Evanston. We're public radio, and you can't be a public radio without having the public involved and being involved in and interested in the public. We, as I mentioned earlier in this program today, we consciously were looking for a new location, an area that would be in a neighborhood. The area that our previous facility had been in had developed because of a lot of urban redevelopment into an area that's highly involved in commercial activities and sports and entertainment, and fell well without what outside the realm of what we were aiming for. So we were looking for a neighborhood, and we love the Evanston neighborhood for a variety of reasons. It's a diverse neighborhood. In order to be successful, public media must evolve to address the needs and concerns and involve all kinds of demographics. We must expand our audience. We must reflect the area we serve. And we think Evanston is a great launching pad for us to do that. And so we really want to be an integral part of the Evanston neighborhood. We want to be good neighbors. The new facility we occupy is immediately adjacent to Evanston Park and Playground. Working with the community and with Cincinnati Recreation Commission, we hope to be able to co-sponsor block parties for the neighborhood, movie nights, projecting movies on our building for the neighborhood. We really want to be an active and engaged resident of Evanston, and we want people to be happy with us and be proud of public radio being their neighbor.
James, we've talked about this impressive legacy that Evanston has as a community, the people, the places. How does that legacy, the power of that legacy, play into the preservation of some of these important landmarks, St. Mark's, King Records?
I'm involved in a lot of stuff going on in Evanston. I am involved on the board of King's Record. I know St. Mark's is setting out right now. No one's in there. Evanston has grown so much since the 60s. It really have. You know, I remember we had grocery store, bakeries, and all from 71 down to Dana. It was a community, and you only went, like Mary said, a couple blocks in the neighborhood. It was as far as you could go. You had to stay within calling distance, and they didn't use no phone. Remember, my uncle would just come out and whistle. I could only go to Clarion, up to Clarion. In fact, I played a lot in the old firehouse on the corner of Clarion and Montgomery Road. Mr. Ed was my barber. Gone, the place is torn down now. But it was family-orientated community. I moved out of Evanston a couple of times, no more than three, to my knowledge. But I always came back. Evanston always was home. My wife is from here in Evanston, born and raised in Evanston. And I don't, Ms. Jones said, I don't see no way right now of me moving out. I always tell them, if they want my house, they got to take me out feet first. And they can have. I've been on my street over on Pleasant View over 31 years. So Evanston is a thriving and great community. Great things are going to happen in Evanston. As the radio station, I hope we can get to be closer. I hope it won't be an interference in the station supporting Evanston as much as we support you all. Even though you had you built on your own property, we still would like to have that support from the radio station and in the community of Evanston.
Yvonne, I want to get your thoughts. What are you excited about when you think about the future of Evanston and the growth and things that are happening?
Well, I'm excited because of some of the new businesses that are coming to the Evanston neighborhood and the college that is being built. For the first time, I'm seeing Xavier University coming on with a new college of osteopathy, and that's very exciting to the neighborhood. Also, I'm looking at new businesses that are moving to Evanston that we never thought would come here before. So we now have restaurants here, and businesses, I think, should be a part of a community, such as having your local dentist, your hairdresser, and those things that you kind of use on a regular basis that keeps you in the neighborhood. And it also tells the business that you like them being there. I like a lot of the new activity that's here. And then the restoring of some of the old buildings. I'm really excited about that because I believe that's going to bring a diversity to the neighborhood, but yet it keeps the same character. We try not to let people build anything too big or too small, but just so that it fits in with what we already have here. So we hope that whoever moves to Evanston know that there is a wonderful culture here, they're welcome here, and we'd like to get to know them.
Mary, what about you? What are you most excited about when you think of Evanston's future?
I am a longtime listener of NPR, and all things considered, I'm glad that you are part of our community now. One of the things that I do on the council is I work in the parks. Evanston Park and Owl's Nest are my focus. So I'm very excited to partner with you guys to see what we can do. And mostly I think back how we used to come outside and play. Well, we didn't have screens and we didn't have computers, but we would get up, eat breakfast and go outside. And we stay outside until our parents called us in. And what that does when children are able to come together, they learn how to interact with each other. Children now, they don't get to experience what we had, the camaraderie, being able to come outside. And, you know, you didn't always get along for that day, but you were able to talk it out and structure and sort ourselves out. Children today don't have that. So I'm excited to see Evanston grow. My goal is to bring out as many people as possible into our green spaces, and I'd like to focus on the young people. I watched my father build a gym out of old discarded pieces of wood, and if he could take those young men from Evanston and actually send them all over the world, why can't we do the same thing? Bring the children out, bring them out into the community so they can get to meet each other. Mr. Stallworth should have 10 to 12 kids trying to cut his grass. Same way with Miss Yvonne. That's what we used to do. And I want to get that camaraderie, that family back. I don't want people just to come and purchase houses for to be landlords and have people come and they're not putting down roots. When you have skin in the game, then you want to see your community develop. And that's why I'm excited for the new things that are going on, the new neighbors that are coming through. And I hope and I pray that we'll be able to have long-lasting relationship with Cincinnati Public Radio. Honestly, I've been listening to you guys since you were down with Xavier. I've always enjoyed public radio, so I'm excited to see what the future is going to bring. I just can't wait to get started. Once we get finished with the redevelopment of Evanston Park, I can't wait to see what we're going to do.
Rich, how do you look forward to working in and with the community of Evanston?
I think the phrase is absolutely correct. She used, we have skin in the game now. We are a part of the neighborhood. We're committed. This is a long-term investment, and it's a vote of confidence to Evanston, not only historically because of what it's been and the heritage it has, but because of what we think this neighborhood can become. We're excited to be a part of that, and anything we can do to partner with the community council and with the neighbors and with the people who live there. As I said earlier, we expect to be a neighbor. We expect to be a good neighbor. We expect to be a dynamic and constructive part of the neighborhood. So we're going to be open to inviting Evanston into our building. We're looking for any suggestions or any opportunities to expand that partnership.
I've been talking with Evanston Community Council President James Stallworth, Evanston Community Council Committee Chair Mary Ward, Evanston Employment Resource Center Job Coach Yvonne Jones, and Cincinnati Public Radio President Rich Eisworth. It was a joy to talk with all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.